This is G with the Wintrust Business Lunch. Hope you're having a fantastic day, getting back into the groove and the swing of things, and hopefully you've kept your New Year's resolutions. You might also be waking up to the sobering realization that you have a lot of credit card debt from all those holiday gifts that you charge on your credit cards, and Elise Glink is going to be on later in the show to talk about how you can pay those credit cards off, maybe transfer some balances, and she's got some good news and some not so good news. We're going to find out the highest credit card balances by state, and we'll see where Illinois is. But we're going to start the show with Jim Dockey, senior editor at Chicago NO, and Catherine Davis, who's the associate editor at Chicago NO. Hello, guys. Welcome.
Hey, G.
Thanks so much for having us.
How are your resolutions, by the way? You holding strong?
I didn't necessarily make any resolutions this year. Just being more involved in general, I think, is my goal for 2020.
Pretty smart.
Yeah, not a big resolutions guy either. Normally, I don't follow them anyway. So, hey, best way not to break a resolution is to not even start one to begin with.
You don't even have to worry about that 10-day mark or the 3-week mark or any of that. They say by 3 weeks, everyone's given up. So tell us a little bit about Chicago NO, especially, in case you don't know about it.
Yeah, so Chicago NO launched 6 years ago, and we cover tech and startups in the city of Chicago. We are part of a network of sites that cover tech in 14 cities across the country. And, really, tech is, in Chicago and across the country, one of the fastest growing sectors. These are where companies are adding lots of new jobs. These are where a lot of new graduates are deciding that they want to work. And so technology is a vital part of Chicago's economy and every economy really across the U.S. And so, when we're covering startups and we're writing about a new venture funding raise or a new acquisition, I mean, these are economic growth engines for the city, right? These are where jobs are being created, where people want to work. And, often when you read a publication like the Tribune or Cranes or whatever, you'll see best places to work. And often technology companies tend to land in there because they do a really interesting work with the culture that they build and making it a great place to work. And so, we get have an opportunity to kind of write about one of Chicago's most interesting and fastest growing sectors. And it's a fun beat to cover.
And they're fascinating stories, whether you're an investor or someone that's in technology. One way or the other, tech is going to affect your life, even if you're just a consumer.
Absolutely. I mean, Jim talked a little bit about kind of the job growth and the job opportunities in the tech industry, but also, we use as consumers, we use tech and some of the products that are made right here in Chicago. We use them all the time. A good example is Cooler Screens, which is a Chicago startup that basically has built, when you go to Walgreens, you want to buy a Coca-Cola, you go up to the cooler and you can just look through the glass. Well, Cooler Screens is creating actual screens now that will show you what's in there, but also give you kind of targeted ads based on your age and gender on what you are might be most likely to buy.
I think this is going to be very beneficial for me personally because usually the screen is all the window is all fogged up.
Right.
I can't
it's hard
even
to see anyway.
What's going on in there. So how is this going to help?
So what's interesting about Cooler Screens is that they've really kind of, for one of the first times, brought the sort of online experience to the physical retail world. So basically what they've done is created brand new doors that go over a traditional cooler screen.
And Jim, this is important because this way they can stay competitive with online retailers.
That's exactly right. And so they can kind of, if a young woman walks up to the screen, they can serve her a drink that typically young women are likely to enjoy, right? And so it can change based on the age and gender of the person kind of approaching. So really innovative technology and kind of completely rethinking the way we think about traditional brick and mortar advertising.
I love it because it's going to make my life easier, but it's a little bit scary that they know me so well and they're collecting all this data. But we're going to talk a little bit more about that coming up. Chicago NO on Wintrust Business Lunch. And this is G here. Welcome back, Jim and Catherine. Jim, you're the senior editor at Chicago NO, and Catherine, you're an associate editor. So we were just talking about these new cooler screens at Walgreens. I love that they're going to make my life a little bit easier so I can see what's inside the cooler, and it already knows through technology and data gathering what might appeal to me the most, but it's a little bit scary.
Yeah,
Sorry.
Some shoppers could feel, you know, a little bit like this is a bit intrusive, right? But, you know, Clueless Green sort of goes over and beyond to kind of say that we're not tracking personally identifiable information. So, you know, when you're surfing the web, websites with ad tracking can kind of know who you are site to site. What Clueless Green and Walgreens are not doing are tracking and storing personally identifiable information. So it's not like you go to one Walgreens, it knows who you are, it can pick up your appearance at your next Walgreens or anything like that. So it's not storing that information that's identifiable person to person. But, you know, you're going to start to see more of these screens rolled out across the country. They started in Chicago early 2019, just 6 locations. Now they are rolling out to about 50 in the Chicagoland area, and then we'll increase that to 2,500 across the U.S.
I'm going to be really upset if it thinks I'm older than I really am and suggests that I get something that maybe is for somebody in, you know, 2 decades older than me. It suggests I need a diet drink. I'm going to be really upset about that, too.
You know, part of it, too, is, you know, kind of the weather conditions as well. So, like, you know, for example, depending on how cold it is outside, they can kind of present other options that might be helpful for somebody who's super thirsty in 90-degree weather, or maybe want something if it's the weather's a little chillier.
Well, it's really cool that it's a Chicago startup, and I'm excited that it's going to make my shopping at Walgreens easier because I'm there pretty much every day. So, okay. So what else you've got for us?
Yeah, so Samara Hernandez, she is a local Chicago investor. She's known primarily for her time at Math Venture Partners, which is a local VC firm here. But at the end of the year, she broke off to launch her own venture firm. It's called Chingona Ventures. And basically what her investing ethos is early stage startups that are overlooked. So she's looking for companies founded by diverse founders, like racial minorities or women, but she's also looking for unique business concepts and more in consumer industries, which is an industry that is sometimes ignored or avoided by Chicago VCs because they tend to be riskier bets than, you know, a SaaS product that, you know, you can scale easily.
Just go over the basics of VCs, okay. Just in case. So, you know, before we talk about what makes this VC different, let's just talk about VCs in general.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, a venture capital firm, essentially, people pour money into it to disperse among startups that they think are good bets, that they think they could make a good investment on. You know, we largely see the startup and tech economy really dependent on VC at the moment. That's really what's fueled the growth of tech companies like Uber and Pinterest and, you know, these consumer startups that we use all the time. So that's kind of the genesis of venture capital.
So that's cool to know because you wouldn't be able to call it Uber or Lyft if it wasn't for a VC group that researched and then invested into these companies.
Exactly. And, you know, venture capital gets some criticism, right? Especially as companies like Uber, for example, raise hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, and then they're kind of relying on venture capital to fuel their businesses. We see that sometimes in Chicago, but, you know, Chicago actually has a reputation for kind of raising thoughtfully, you know, relying on their revenue to grow their businesses alongside venture capital. But venture capital is often used as kind of an accelerant, right? So it's sort of throwing gasoline on the fire, helping companies kind of continue to scale and grow really fast, very helpful kind of in the early days as companies are starting to get off the ground and still starting to find their revenue streams. And so a lot of seed capital and Series A capital is really important to startups. And this venture fund, Chingona Ventures, really interesting for a few reasons. One, like Catherine mentioned, this is a fund looking at consumer businesses. So a lot of consumer startups early stage have a hard time kind of raising venture funding.
I was going to ask you what it makes hers so different.
Yeah, well, it is the focus on early stage companies, but also on consumer industry. So, you know, she told me that the firm doesn't necessarily have a particular target industry, but it gravitates toward fintech, food tech, female tech, wellness products. So she's invested in like a local marijuana company that's building, kind of a wholesale SaaS product for the marijuana industry. So, you know, kind of just those companies that are a little out of the box that, you know, maybe the more traditional VCs aren't looking at because they're so focused on the G2 crowds and, you know, the uptakes of Chicago. But that's what Samara's focusing on.
Catherine, how much money were we talking about in her VC?
So she said that her checks are about $100,000, you know, depending on the vitality of the fund, that could go up. It depends. But yeah, it's generally she's participating in seed or series A rounds.
And the notable thing about this fund specifically is that, you know, Samara, you know, is likely, you know, the first or only Latinx woman in Chicago to launch her own VC fund. We're seeing a huge issue in venture capital in terms of diversity. Funds are putting more and more women on their firm as a partner, but we're not really seeing a lot of women kind of going off and creating, launching, leading their own fund. And Samara Hernandez is kind of really trailblazing that in Chicago.
We're talking to the editors of Chicago Inno. And Jim, we're talking about venture VCs and venture funds. So why don't we talk about J.D. Vance?
Yeah, so J.D. Vance is an investor in tech, pretty well known. You may have read his book, Hillbilly Elegy, which came out a couple years ago. He, you know, kind of made headlines when he joined Revolution, which is a venture fund based out of D.C. from the founder of AOL, Steve Case. And, you know, what they did is they set out to kind of create a fund to invest in startups outside of Silicon Valley, New York. And that was called the Rise of the Rest Seed Fund. And they were kind of generating headlines by this big national bus tour that they were on, where they went city to city, really kind of highlighting cities in terms of quote-unquote comeback cities. So these are cities that may have been hit by the recession, struggled after 2008, 2009, and have kind of been reborn, and in part by the growth in technology companies. So think cities like Detroit and Cleveland and even Chicago. And so there are a lot of cities that this sort of Rise of the Rest seed fund has kind of focused on, and J.D. Vance was a part of that. So just last week, it was announced that he's breaking away from that fund and creating his brand new fund in the Midwest. It's a $125 million Midwest VC fund. It's going to be based in Cincinnati. And why that matters to Chicago is that here is another nine-figure VC fund for Midwest startups. There are not a ton of super deep-pocketed venture funds like this in the Midwest, and so the fact that there's a $125 million fund just in nearby Cincinnati is going to be impactful for Illinois startups and startups really across the region.
Have you read Hillbilly Elegy?
I have not read that book. It's on my to-do list for sure. So it's not one that I've read, but I know that that book was everywhere. It seemed like it was getting read by just about everybody in the tech and then in just the VC world as well.
Okay, so recommended for your reading list.
That's right.
Okay, so Catherine Davis, who's the associate editor at Chicago Inno, tell us about Jellyvision. It's shrinking some of its workforce.
That's right. So last week, Jellyvision announced that they laid off 65 people. That was about a 15% reduction in its staff and also the company's first workforce reduction in its 18-year history. I was talking to the CEO last week about it, and, you know, she was very apologetic and very kind of transparent with me about the reason for the cuts and, you know, kind of the mistakes that were made at the executive level that resulted in those, which I think is, you know, one, pretty commendable, because oftentimes when there's a layoff at a company, you get like a one sentence statement, you know, from the PR firm, and generally they're pretty tight-lipped about the reasons behind it.
So you're listening and you probably think, Jellyvision, who's Jellyvision? But you might know them because they had a software product named Alex, A-L-E-X.
Yep.
And I used Alex.
Oh, really?
Once to sign up for my healthcare at a company that I work for.
Yeah, so that's their whole thing. They're basically like a benefits platform to help employees sign up for difficult things like healthcare. You know, as part of the cuts were kind of because they weren't growing as quickly as they wanted to. And Amanda Lannert, the CEO, was telling me that to address those growth challenges, they're going to expand the benefits platform. So eventually it's going to be more overarching financial wellness assistance, so 401k assistance and kind of investment account management, things like that.
Well, it is helpful to have someone walk you, even if it's a virtual person on the computer, to walk you through your healthcare benefits, because it's very confusing. And then on top of that, I can imagine walking through your retirement choices is also helpful.
Totally. And Jellyvision has gone through a really kind of interesting pivot within its business. So it started out as a video game company, kind of doing video games in its early days, almost 20 years ago, and then now doing, you know, kind of HR assistance and benefits assistance. I mean, that's a pretty big pivot, but they've really been able to grow quickly. And, you know, they have done it actually without a lot of venture capital. So we've kind of spent a lot of today talking about VC growth and VC and startups. And Jellyvision really has kind of been able to grow on its own revenue and with its own growth. And so definitely a high growth company in Chicago, a little bit of a speed bump for them, but I expect some continued growth from Jellyvision.
Well, big thanks to Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis, both with Chicago Inno. And what's your website?
Check us out at chicagoinno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. We're going to be talking about how you can pay off your credit card debts. Maybe you've got some from the holidays. That and a whole lot more coming up on WGN Radio. Elise Glink, she is a personal finance expert, real estate expert. She has written books, and she has a fabulous website called thinkglink.com. Elise, how are you?
Gee, it's so nice to be here, and Happy New Year.
Same to you. A lot of people are realizing that they spent too much money over the holidays and charged it to their credit cards, and now they're asking you, what do we do?
I know. Those bills are now coming due, and everybody's looking at their bills and the amounts and thinking, why did I charge so much?
It felt so good at the time.
You just got to look back on those smiling, happy faces on Christmas morning and remember why you did it, but now the challenge is to get it paid off as quickly as possible.
Of course, it's hard to do if you have a high interest rate.
It is. And so it's interesting. We were looking at what the new average credit card balances are by state. This is a new survey that just came out. And on average, Americans are carrying about almost $6,200 in credit card debt, according to Experian's Consumer Credit Review for 2019. They did that at the end. But in Alaska, the average person is carrying $8,000 of credit card debt.
Wow. And what's our Illinois numbers?
Oh, my goodness. Illinois, I have to find it, and I'll do that while we're chatting. But it's sort of, I think Illinois is right about in the middle, around $6,200.
So not as bad as Alaska, because it's the most.
But also not as good as Iowa, which is $4,700. And so it's interesting that the further you live from the coast, in the middle of the country where we have lower costs of living typically, you definitely have a lower average credit card balance. So it's good to know that in our area, people are spending a little bit less, but yet those interest rates can really skyrocket, particularly if your credit score isn't that high.
Aha. So what do we do if we are finding ourselves having difficulty paying down the debt?
You know, one of the things that's super important for your credit score is to get your, at least your minimum amount paid on time. I think what happens is a lot of people think, I can't afford to make any of those payments, and so what I'm going to do is I'm going to just not do anything. And you stick your head in the sand and you get kind of paralyzed, and that's really just about the worst thing that you can do. So if you can make your minimum payment, even if you can't pay more down of the debt right now, make that minimum payment and keep your credit score boosted as high as you can. And then start to throw every extra cent you can towards getting that debt paid down.
So the key is don't get behind on your minimum payments at the very least.
Yeah, you really don't want to do that because your credit score will take an immediate hit if you are more than 30 days late on your payments. You know, on-time payments is the number one way to keep your credit score as high as possible. And surprisingly, even with record amounts of debt, consumer debt, the average FICO score, and FICO is the Fair Isaac score, it's one way to measure your credit, the FICO score in the U.S. hit a record high of 703 last year, which is up 14 points since 2010. So that may not sound like a lot, but it could really mean the difference between getting an amazing rate on a loan or a credit card debt or not such a great rate.
Well, if you're someone that needs to get a great rate for a balance transfer, you tend not to be able to get one because your credit card rate, I mean, your credit rating isn't as high as it needs to be to get a great rate. That's the
right
conundrum.
It is. And balance transfers are becoming more popular again as people start to realize that they can shift over to a near zero down card or at zero down for 6 months, and then it would kick into gear. And that gives you the impetus and the extra cash to be able to throw a huge wad at that debt and really start to get it paid down quickly.
So you were correct. Illinois is at $6,253 for the average credit card debt for the average person in the state. What if you have, you've maxed out your cards, you need to consolidate your credit or get a balance transfer rate, but you really can't figure out a way to do so because your credit score isn't high enough. Are there options?
Well, the first thing to do is to pull a free copy of your credit history from annualcreditreport.com. You can start there and take a deeper dive into what's going on. And you can also sign up for up to, I think it's 6 free credit reports a year from Equifax at myequifax.com. They just changed the rules on that this year. Once you start looking at your credit history, you may be able to understand a little bit more about why your credit score isn't as high as it could be. So it could be that you have some late payments, or it could be that you maybe have some information on your credit that doesn't belong to you. Perhaps you've been a victim of identity theft. There's been a lot of that going around lately. If you can clear up any errors or issues relating to your credit and find a way to sort of start fresh, that's a really good thing to do. And every little bit helps. Every 10 points that you can raise your credit over time is really important. And again, it all goes back to paying on time. You want to do as much of that, paying the minimum balance on time every month as you can.
Would you ever recommend that people pull from or take a loan from their 401k in order to pay off credit card debt?
You know, it's a great question because, you know, you might have some extra money in your 401k and you're saving it and you think, I'm not going to use that for 30 years. And in the meantime, I could get rid of this, you know, credit card debt that's 25%. I think if you've got you're in real trouble and you can't figure out any other place to get the cash to pay down that debt, you might want to look as a last resort at your 401k. But I'll tell you that employers are very concerned that many employees are using that 401k like a checkbook, and they dip into it for all sorts of things. They pay it back, but every time you take a lump sum out of your 401k, you may be exposing yourself to a tax consequence, and that money's not earning interest. This year, or I should say 2019, the stock market went up 28%, and if you were in an S&P 500 index fund, that would have been great. So you want to be careful.
Mm-hmm. What else would you recommend that people do if they're trying to figure out a way to pay off credit card debt? I know that there's been huge growth in this credit card debt consolidation businesses.
There has been. I think before I looked at a credit card consolidation, what I might do is take a second job or a part-time job, something where I could just dedicate all of that extra income to paying down the debt as quickly as possible. And it doesn't have to be a second job for life. I understand it's kind of tough to work two full-time jobs and even two part-time jobs, but the gig economy allows a lot of flexibility, and this might be a good way to bring in some fast cash.
Well, Elise, thank you so much for being with us. I know that you just wrote a recent article on kitchen renovations, right?
I did. It's really, it's all about the island. As I say in my newsletter this week, everybody is back to having islands. But the good news is that if you're tired of gray, designers have decreed that gray is no longer the color for kitchens. So have at it, color.
Wow. Okay. And of course, that's on thinkglink.com. Thank you, Elise, for being with us. We always look forward to Mondays. You chase away our Monday blues. So thanks so much.
You're welcome, G. Talk to you next week.
Well, that was fantastic advice about paying your credit cards off from Elise Glink. Amy Guth just walked into the Wintrust Business Lunch studio. Welcome,
I just sort of wandered in and
yes.
sat down.
A fabulous host and reporter that covers a lot of business news. I wanted to talk to you about a couple of trending stories that I've found that I haven't had a chance to discuss. So
well, I want to talk to you about some trending stories. So let's see your list and see how they match
perfect.
Up with mine.
Well, something that I really hope to eventually talk to Taco Bell, someone official from Taco Bell, and Jasmine's going to be interested in this too. Taco Bell is planning to test a six-figure salary for managers.
So far, our topics are matching.
Really?
Okay,
that's
great. On my list too. Yeah.
This is only validation for me, so thank you, Amy. So they're going to test out a six-figure salary for managers. So $100,000 salary for the general managers of certain company-owned locations later this year. So I'm assuming that that means they're not franchised, they're company-owned. All employees at these stores are eligible also for at least 24 hours of paid sick time per year. And this is all aimed to enhance restaurant performance and employee satisfaction. Also, of course, a lot of restaurants and fast food chains are having difficulty recruiting quality employees and retaining them, too.
Well, and this has been, you know, this was something that factored in a lot during the Fight for 15 conversations. We had a lot of protests around the city. So that's been, you know, fast food in particular has kind of always been in the crosshairs of that conversation around minimum wage conversations. And, you know, this is no exception. So what Taco Bell's is attempting to do is they're like, let's just step up our game in a space where we know it's always about, you know, not paying people that much. No one enters fast food because they want to get rich. You might buy a franchise to make some money, but usually that's a job because that's a job and you need a job. A lot of young people work in fast food, things like that. So they're experimenting with what would it look like if we paid our managers at certain locations, you know, $100,000, that's a lot more than other fast food managers are working or earning. And so they're experimenting to see what that would look like. I think it's a worthy experiment. I think it's going to be interesting to see that. I know I saw that too. I saw that on Twitter over the weekend and a lot of people were going, I'll go work at Taco Bell. I'll manage the heck out of a Taco Bell. So we'll see how that shakes out. I think it will be interesting. I mean, the proof will be in the details of that, of how that works, but we shall see. Especially, I mean, Taco Bell's doing a lot of stuff, right? They're experimenting with the Taco Bell Cantina line. They're serving alcohol there.
In the Wicker Park location. I know that for a fact.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen that one too. And I like have gone in there and seen people drinking a beer and walked by and you're like, why is that guy drinking a beer in a Taco Bell? Well, that's a thing now. So I think they're trying to move around in that space and kind of find their footing and see what's up.
Something else interesting brought up in this Business Insider article, it's fast food chains, they say, unlike a lot of other major retailer companies like Amazon and Target and Costco. So fast food chains have primarily focused on perks as opposed to necessarily raising wages. For example, Shake Shack has tested a 4-day work week. I don't know if they're still doing that. Starbucks has also added mental health benefits. I know that everyone that I know right now, including myself, I will admit it, has now downloaded a meditation app, and Starbucks was giving their employees a free subscription to a meditation app. I won't call it by name. And the employees were saying, hey, look, I love these perks, but I'd rather show me the money. Show me the money.
And also, I mean, that's one of those Band-Aid things, right? It's like, we recognize this is terrible. Have a meditation app. It's like, well, maybe just let's work on it not being terrible. Instead of just giving me a meditation app, how about I just... Also, there's a really interesting story. There is a Buddhist leadership group that went and examined all of these apps, and they were kind of like, this, in fact, perhaps is only masking some symptoms of the major disorders that emerge from stress. They're so like all these meditation experts kind of went all through them, and they're like, they're good. Please keep using them, but recognize they're not in place of a therapist. They're not in place of a daily deep meditation practice. I mean, it was really a thing. And I again, saw a lot of people reacting. Anytime there's a story, I look at Twitter, say, what are people reacting to? What are the comments say? And a lot of people are like, but I love my Headspace app. I love my Calm app. I love them. They felt like there's nothing wrong with these apps. Definitely use them. But don't say, okay, I'm good now. I had my meditation. Like, please seek help for mental illness if you have one, if you need therapy. Who doesn't, right? Like, everyone can benefit from therapy.
Jinx.
Right? Go for it. So, you know, their thing was like, these perhaps are only addressing the symptoms of stress. You still need to think about and root out the places where stress exists in your life.
Amy, I just want to create an app, because then that'd be rich. These apps, some of them cost a lot of money to subscribe.
I know. I mean, I think they're, what, $90-$100 bucks a year for the meditation?
Especially app? For these nicer ones that, you know, constantly put out new content. But, okay. So, you want to do one trending story? I think we have time for one more.
Well, you know, this is the new Boeing CEO started today. It's day one.
Yes.
There's a lot of think pieces about this, of kind of what is it going to take to turn around Boeing. You and I have talked about Boeing.
Mm-hmm. And you've been covering it since the beginning.
Since the jump, I've been looking at Boeing. I mean, here's a company headquartered right here. They're just, you know, blocks away from where we are now. So, you know, there's the local piece of this story that's playing out on the world stage. It's a huge story, and it just keeps changing and keeps getting bigger and bigger. But here, you know, the head of counsel has moved out. The CEO has been ousted. Here's the new guy. He's in. It's going to take a lot to turn around, especially at this point. There have been a lot of emails and internal documents that have come out in the last couple of weeks that really points to a culture of cutting corners, a lot of mistrust, a lot of things like that. So I think a lot of eyes are on the new guy, Calhoun, to see, okay, what you got? What are you going to do? you couldn't pay me enough for that job, right?
Because Oh, come on. I think we could. No way.
That guy, because it's one thing, going into a new job very visibly is one thing. Going in with this much on your shoulders and this much riding on it with the stakes this high, that's hard.
But I think when you're...
Also, no one would want me to be the CEO of Boeing. I have no idea anything about aerospace.
I don't know about that. But I think that at that point, when you're in the upper echelons of management and being running a company that way, this is probably a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to face a challenge. And if he's able to do it... Just think about it. He'll be written about forever in every MBA course.
Yeah, I mean, he could be the turnaround guy. It's a big opportunity for him. He's got a lot ahead, so I hope he really brings in the right people and has the right voices and makes the right decisions and all that. But, you know, a lot of people are kind of looking at him like, okay, not that you're going to do anything on day one. I mean, he's probably just getting his ID badge, going through the HR handbook. Like, what? No, he works there already. But, you know, it's probably a lot of stuff he's got to start with. But, you know, especially that first 90 to 100 days, okay, what do you got? Because I think a lot of people are going to be looking to him to do very visible things, make some big strategic decisions really, really fast.
Maybe bringing in new team members, get rid of some.
Yeah, maybe.
Transition.
I mean, another piece of this quickly is that Dennis Muilenburg was the ousted CEO. He was denied severance, but he's still leaving with $80 million. To put some perspective on that.
Whoa, unbelievable.
I mean, that's a ton of money,
Oh.
$50 million has been set aside for families of victims from the two crashes.
Oh, no, that's a terrible disparity.
So when you start looking at that, it goes, ear. Even though he was denied severance, that's still a pretty significant chunk of change.
Oh, my goodness. I don't like that comparison at all.
So I'm sure he will not be applying for the Taco Bell job.
Well,
no. No way. He doesn't need it.
I don't think so. Absolutely not. He can retire now. Well, thanks so much to WGN host and reporter Amy Guth.
Thanks so much
for being in studio.